Welcome back to the McCann Dogs podcast, episode 12. And how are yourselves? I lost it. I don't know. Let's delve into 12. That's good. I don't know how much longer this rhyming thing will last, but it is fun for me in the first few seconds of the episode. Yeah. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about training with food and what the difference between a bribe is versus a reward. Now, I love getting into conversations about this on this topic from people who say, I don't really want my dog to listen to me only when I have food. And, I want my dog to listen to me because they respect me. These conversations are fun for me to have because we use food in training and we use a lot of it at the beginning our dogs with the sole intention of working away from food so that the dog listens to you because they want to.
You bet.
So that you don't have to be holding a bag of treats or a handful of kibble or whatever, a steak for your dog to listen. But I think the struggle that a lot of people have is knowing the difference between what a bribe is versus a reward. And Shannon's written a really nice article here. I'll post a link to it in the show notes below that talks a little bit about what the difference is. And in today's show, we're going to go over sort of high level, but also breaking down. She's created an acronym, and I hope you like acronyms because we use a lot of them here on the podcast. We like to have those simple associations so that information is available to you right when you need it. And I know personally, I find an acronym is a great way to do that.
Yeah, great memory.
I worked for a little over 10 years as a paramedic, and my job was I used a lot of acronyms for patient interviews, for drug administration, for calculating drug administration, for all of these things. I felt an acronym was a great way. And in today's show, Shannon has come up with the acronym TRAIN, T-R-A-I-N.
How appropriate.
Yes, it does make sense. But we do need to talk a little bit about what each of those letters means and how you can apply these steps to your training so that you aren't always dependent on food and so that you understand the difference between a bribe and a reward. Exactly. So Shannon, what was the motivation for this article?
It's such an important thing to be able to use food appropriately in training and get not only results, but reliable results and get to the point where you don't have to continually reward those behaviors each and every time they happen. And it's actually a fairly simple process, but as humans, of course, we overcomplicate things so much. So what we want to do is just simplify things. And I thought this would be a great way of doing that. And I think the first thing that we should do, it's important to define the bribe versus the reward. So the bribe would be, I'm going to show you a cookie, I want you to sit, versus the reward of I want you to sit, the dog did, now I get a reward for doing that. So the reward comes after the fact for a job well done. It's the paycheck at the end of the 2-week period versus somebody, you know, waving $20 in front of you and saying, please come to work, I'll give you this $20.
Yeah, you know, there's probably lots of people listening right now who are thinking like, oh man, you know, my dog only comes inside when I say, shake a bag of cookies or, you know, I do something very specifically, I can't get a response. Well, what's happened is you've accidentally bribed your dog too many times in a row and your dog now understands that eventually you will bribe them to get whatever result you want.
Absolutely. There's actually a house 2 doors down from me. And when I have my window open in my bedroom upstairs and she's calling her dog in for the evening, I can hear her quite loud and clear with, come and get a cookie. Susie, come and get a cookie. Come and get a cookie. And eventually Susie decides she'd like a cookie and she comes in the house.
Yeah. Let's talk about your acronym. And because I think people will very quickly see the difference between bribe and a reward. Before we even get to the T, you talk about what a bribe is. Mm-hmm. Should we talk about what a lure is and the difference between?
Yeah, good idea. So basically the lure is showing the dog how to follow food into a position. And it's not meant to, it is meant a little bit to hold the dog's attention in terms of helping them find position, but we don't want to use the lure as a constant attention grabber for our dog. So we want to use the lure for only a short period of time to show before we start to wean away from it.
For sure. Now, I was just taking a drink of water there. I apologize. Now, with understanding the difference between a reward and a lure and a bribe, how do we avoid using a bribe in our training? How do we avoid making these huge mistakes that so many people make, in the early stages? Because that's when the dog's imprinted so quickly with some of the wrong information. So
you bet.
You talk about your acronym TRAIN. T is teach the position. What does that mean?
Yeah. So teaching the position would be the luring portion. But to speak to your question, what we want to do is set our dogs up for success. So when I start my luring, I am going to do so in an area where I have nothing competing for my dog's attention. And I do that so that I can get my dog to a point where he finds value in paying attention to me, and that food is enough to hold his attention and enough to get him in position without any conflicts. Because I don't want him thinking, okay, you know what? I don't really want that. I don't really want to pay attention to you right now. And then he wanders over and finds something interesting on the floor. And I say, oh, but please pay attention to me with that cookie. That's not the way I want to set things up. I want, this is my clean white room. You know, you've heard us all talk about the white room before. This is my setup where I'm going to be successful. So there's never a chance that I have to say, oh, please pay attention to me. I'm going to show you this cookie. If you do, it's just part of the equation. And it's there to basically lure the dog into position. So if it was a sit, I would be luring just gently above my dog's nose until they got into position. And that's basically just to teach how to get into that position from my human perspective.
And it's pretty short-lived. Like, this stage is pretty short-lived with a lot of dogs. You show them that there's value in ultimately getting to this. The next step that you talk about is removing the lure. And, I think this is where the wheels start to come off when it comes to a lot of people. I think they remain in that teach the position part for way too long, maybe forever. But removing the lure is a critical step to moving away from having to have food in your hand to get your dog to do something.
You bet. And it can be a difficult balance to find, because we do need to do enough repetition with the puppy that they're fluid at the skill before we move away from that lure. So that might mean, for a sit, for example, you might only have to do 4 or 5 lures into a sit, because it tends to be a natural position for the dogs to get into. It tends to be really easy for us to get that. Usually we're standing up. They're way down low because they're usually small at that point. So it's easy for their butts to go down. Gravity sort of takes over there. But you might need to do a lot of repetition with the down, with the lure, in order to get your dog to completely understand. You know, if they are still sort of stuck going halfway down, as an example, that dog's not ready for the lure to be removed. What we want to do, though, is once they are fluid. So once my dog can easily follow the lure into the down position, as an example, I'm going to ditch the lure. And that means I just remove the food from my hand. That is the only difference. And a little tip that'll set you up for success with this: don't go cold turkey without the food. So you might do 3 or 4 downs in a row with food in your hand, and then the next repetition, the fifth one, you're just going to leave the cookie out of your hand. But the key is your hand needs to look identical. So as you move your hand, it still needs to appear as it did when you had a piece of food pinched there. So when you're working with the lure, be conscious of that. Make sure you pay attention to how you actually form your hand, because the signal is going to be important for the dog. Now on your fifth repetition, you just leave the food out of your hand. Try the same lure, make sure it looks exactly the same. And when your dog gets into position, you're going to mark with yes and then reward them. So the reward might come from your other hand. It might come from a pocket or a bait pouch, but it's basically not been there as the initiator of the behavior. It's there to reward the behavior. And that right there, that is the golden nugget. You know, that's the dog training golden nugget right there, is we want to remove that food in a transition that still allows the dog to get the reinforcement. So I'm not saying you're done with food forever because I did 4 lures into a sit and now you should be good to go for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that I'm going to transition away from that lure so that now you know how to follow the signal without food in it. But you don't really, the dog doesn't even notice the difference because the reward still comes. It's still valuable for them to do it. But the difference being what prompts the behavior.
One of the common challenges that people have, and there are very few people I have met as an instructor that are intuitive or self-aware enough to understand when they've changed the signal. This is usually something we'll have to say, oh, don't forget, try to make your hand look the same. Because the moment we start to get a little more fluid behavior with a down or a sit or whatever the thing is, and we start to remove that lure, all of a sudden we get finger guns or the point or snap and point. Yeah, or it just looks different. And it's really, you know, we talk a lot about the three D's. You know, when you change one thing up, you have to make sure everything else remains the same. You have to introduce these changes gradually. And that's a significant one. If your hand looks completely different with food than without, it's your dog's, most dogs are going to understand that the picture is different here and I'm not going to perform the same.
Yeah. And if you watch a group of dogs, they do not communicate with verbal means.
Right.
So that the physical skills, the physical cues are so important to the dog. They are experts at reading body language. So if that signal looks even slightly different, your dog is probably going to pick up on that. And that's when we start getting people saying, oh, this dog is stubborn because he'll do it with food, but he won't do it unless I have food.
Right.
And a lot of the times it's because we are not conscious of changing our signals and changing the way it looks to our dog.
Yeah. Now, the next step that comes along is adding reward. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about what that means and how people can apply that in their training.
Yeah. And well, and that goes hand in hand with removing the lure from the signal. And then the reward comes in after the fact and making sure that it's distinguished as the reward, that we're not just not feeding the dog. We're not rewarding the dog. We're still reinforcing this behavior heavily because we want to make sure that our dog says, hey, it's worth my while to go down, even if I don't see food. And then we're going to progress more from there, of course.
What sort of criteria do you have at that point? Because I think that's an important point to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, you bet. So as you mentioned, the three D's are really important to keep in mind with that. So my criteria will float around based on what those three D's are doing. If I'm in a really distracting environment, my criteria is still high. I still expect when I say sit to my dog or when I'm, you know, if I'm teaching, for example, and I haven't added a verbal cue in yet, and I'm just using my, I'm just using that reward that I'm adding in and the signal and whatnot without a verbal just yet, that's the point where I'm going to make sure that my dog is understanding. This is a very, very valuable thing.
One thing that you haven't talked about yet is when you're teaching a dog to sit is saying sit. And we work with a lot of puppy owners who have used their name a million times without ever really training it or used sit as a command without ever really training it correctly. And what you end up with is a puppy who the word, their name or the word sit really doesn't mean much because they haven't been given clear information.
You bet. And I think people get lucky with the sit because of the things that we mentioned, right? The gravity thing and the fact that that behavior is so readily offered by the dog. So they get away with it and then they expect to get away with the same sort of process with other positions. And of course, it's confusing because the dog isn't quite sure what it is. But what we want to identify it once they understand it. So I call this name it once you know it. That's a phrase that floats around in the dog training community. So once my dog understands what the position is, that's when I'm going to start to add the cue in. So I might give a little brief pause between my verbal cue and then my signal without food. I'm still doing the same thing where it's signal only, not food. I'm going to give my verbal cue first, pause for just a second, then follow through with that signal, which gives my dog an opportunity to anticipate when they hear the verbal. And this goes to speaking to how much they read body language. They need that verbal cue isolated away from any other body language so that they have an opportunity to focus on that, because that's really an unnatural thing for them to do, is to listen to actual verbal commands. So we want to make sure that it's a good clear pause, sit, then lure. Or sit, then signal, and then you're still going to reward at that point as well.
Yeah, and it's not, if you've trained something or you're working with your dog and you start thinking, geez, well, I've made all of these mistakes, it's not too late. It's not too late to start to teach the dog the right behavior, but you do need to be consistent about it. You know, you do need to make sure that you're thinking of this acronym or you're thinking of those steps every time when you're working with your dog.
You bet. And we need to make sure that we are consistent with our dogs in both the verbal and the way the verbal sounds and the signal and the way the signal looks, so that we can get consistent behavior and consistent response from our dogs across the board as we add in those challenges, the distance, the duration, the distraction. All of those things are going to challenge my dog's ability to sit. And we've talked about distractions and about proofing through distractions. You know, I want to make sure that when my dog actually learns a behavior, they learn it so well that if I said sit, for example, and all at the same time I'm physically trying to hold my dog in a stand, my dog is still going to try really, really hard to sit if he physically can, because he knows that sit means sit so clearly. So even if I'm proofing and, you know, gently pulling on him as he's trying to sit, he's still going to try to sit because I've worked through so much repetition with the distance, with the distraction, with the duration, that any regular distraction is just a piece of cake.
It makes me think a little bit about the management that our puppy owners who are listening should be thinking about setting their dog up to be successful, having that leash or house line on, managing that environment when you're starting off with this, because there's just no value for that word at this point. What sort of management would you be thinking about if you're a new puppy owner and you're thinking like, okay, I think I've got step one done. How do we move to step two?
Yeah, you bet. So again, it's all in the way you set things up. So if you take your dog and you overface them and you try to get responses, you're not going to get it. So this is where people start saying my dog's stubborn because if I have to show him food. If you're in an environment where your dog is overfaced by the distraction, they're conflicted by something else. You know, you say you're at a park and there's another dog at the park and they're not ready to contend with that distraction yet. You know, you just haven't had enough time or enough training experience in there. What we want to make sure of is that we're giving that dog a fair shake. So if he's so focused on that other dog at the park that I can't get his attention by any other means than sticking food in his face, I am shooting myself in the foot. I really, really am. I need to take more distance away from that other dog. Maybe I need to find another park where there's nothing going on at all. You know, whatever you need to do, it needs to change so that the dog can have success, so that they learn that you are valuable. That transfer of value happens through repetition and experience. And if we don't give our dogs the repetition and experience, the value doesn't transfer. So what is valuable for them innately becomes the thing that they want to focus on, which of course, if you're at the park and there's another dog, it's probably going to be that other dog if you haven't taught them that you're worth listening to yet.
Yeah, absolutely. When we talk about these steps that you take, and we're talking about adding reward at the end when your dog's doing doing things correctly and you're successful, but we don't want to reward every single time. There's actually lots of scientific evidence that talks about the increased motivation and drive when you are randomly rewarding. Or, you know, you mentioned with the N for train, not every play wins. And I think that is a crucial part of the dog training.
You got it. And that, I mean, that's the final component. Once you've taught it, once you've shown them how to do it, once you've added the verbal cue in, you've identified it, they know this behavior now, you know, you've done some work to prove through it, they're confident in knowing what it is that they're expected to do, now you need to randomize the reward schedule. And that doesn't mean that you can't reward them by other means. It just means that you need to think about having different forms of rewards coming with that. And you also need to understand a little bit about how behavior strengthens when it's randomized by reward. So thinking about not every play wins, and this is, you know, directly thinking about casinos. When you go to a slot machine and you pull that handle, it is a very exciting thing by comparison to going to the bank machine to take out money, right? Even though, you know, hopefully, when you go to the bank to take out money, you're successful at that every time. Yes. Hopefully, we're all that blessed.
Yeah.
It's not an exciting thing. It's expected. It's, you know, that's what becomes of the dog that gets a cookie every single time they sit.
Yeah.
We want to give them more than that. You know, we want to develop other reward systems that we can rely on so that we have something to still have a value added for our dog without having to give them a cookie. And if you've listened to the podcast before, you've heard me talk about Ned and butt scratches. You know, this is one of my systems of rewards with him when he's really proud of himself. That's when he sidles up and sticks his butt right to me and looks backwards at me expectantly, because this is a system of reward I've built with him. You know, he's not really keen on having his ears rubbed or his head pet. It's not rewarding for him, but he loves a good butt scratch. So that's one of the things that I use in place of food when I'm randomizing my rewards. You know, sometimes it's just a good dog.
Yeah.
You know, way to go, buddy. You're a good dog. Or a smile at them, right? They know when you're happy with them. Genuinely celebrate with your dog. They know it.
Oh, you know. Absolutely. And you can tell. I mean, we can tell. And if another human or your dog trainer can tell, your dog can definitely tell.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
You talked a little bit about randomizing the kind of reward. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about maybe you can talk about some examples of fun ways to an exercise like the recall.
Yeah.
You know, changing up that ending of your recall is really important. And, you know, maybe we can couple of fun ideas for ways that you can randomize that reward for your
dog?
Yeah,
you bet. Whatever your dog likes, food, toys, play, run away. Dogs love to chase. You know, I mean, if you watch two dogs playing with each other, they're usually running. You know, unless you have a wrestling pair, they're usually running, and one dog is chasing and the other dog is being chased, and it's just a blast. And you can use that in your recall training. If you're running, your dog's likely going to chase you. And then when they catch you, the big party ensues. I love being outside and being, you know, down and dirty outside, getting off road, et cetera. I will do a lot of rolling around in grass at the end of my recall with my puppies because it's fun. Yes, you know, yeah. They reach me, I fall over, we play around on the ground. It's a great recall, or it's a great reward for a recall, using a toy as they're chasing you, pulling out a toy and having a party. More obscure rewards can be things your dogs love. Ned, of course, and water. You've all heard me talk about Ned and water. If I called Ned to come and he was beelining to me, an amazing reward for that dog would be to say, yes, go swim, and direct him to whatever body. Hopefully there's something there for him he can actually swim in, and I'm not just teasing him. But that's a great reward. You know, it doesn't have to just be food. There's so much that your dog could love.
Yeah, and that applies to all of your exercises, not just the recall. A couple I was thinking of that really worked for me and Deegan were I would throw the toy. This was after I had really reinforced her a lot for sitting in front. And I was probably in grade 2 or 3 the first time I was training her, first dog that I trained here at McCann Dogs. And one of the instructors mentioned that, you know, why don't you throw the toy between your legs? Have a run through.
Yeah.
And boy, oh boy, changing up that reward when I'd go outside. It was incredible the amount of drive that increased for her. And
amazing.
It was such a simple change.
She loved it.
Yeah. And you know, I would reward her for that nice sit in front, you know, 6 times out of 10. And then maybe one was running, two were running away. And then one was throwing the toy through my legs, and then she'd bring it back to me. But boy, when you change up that reward system, it can make just all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. And, you know, bring a variety of things out with you. I've graduated from a bait pouch to a training vest these days because I need more pockets than just what a bait pouch will provide. So I'll usually have a toy stuck in the back and a frisbee stuck in the back. And then I've got food here, and I've got a tennis ball in the left pocket, and I've got a little tug toy in the right.
And if a fishing party breaks out, I mean, you're ready. You know, you have the pockets that you need.
I need a different hat then.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But changing some of those things up can be so valuable. And you know, sometimes it can be hard to know what's right for your dog. Mm-hmm. And we actually have some online training programs, our life skills program, I'm thinking about specifically, where one of the main topics that we teach you is the recall. We talk about recall, walking on leash. We talk about stays. We talk about a ton of other exercises. But the recall is such a valuable one. And knowing when's the right time to change up the reward is important. And knowing what, in us as instructors, we get sent videos from all over the world, and we have conversations with our students that say, I just can't quite figure out, what am I doing wrong here? You know, he's circling around me, or, you know, there's some specific thing that the student is struggling with. Well, in a 2-minute conversation, question and answer, or reviewing a video in 15 seconds, an instructor, one of our McCann Dogs instructors, can give that person the right information to be successful faster so that they're not struggling, wondering what on earth is going wrong. So I just wanted to quickly point out our life skills program. I'll list a link in the show notes below so that you can check that out for your dogs that are in training over 5 months. So we should probably wrap on that, but I do want to go over, if you can just quickly go over the acronym again for those people who are like, oh, geez, I've taken notes and I missed a section.
You bet. So it was T for teach the position or the thing that you're teaching. R for remove the lure, which means just getting rid of the food in your hand. A for add reward. So this is where we transition from it being a lure to it being a reward that comes after the fact, so that we don't call our dogs stubborn. We teach them to perform without having to see that food first.
Unless your dog's named Stubborn. And then you can call the dog Stubborn all you want.
Stubborn, come.
Stubborn sit.
The I is for identifying it. Name it once you know it. We don't like to give it a name before they know what the actual behavior is, so we're not wasting our breath. And N is not every play wins. This is randomizing the reinforcement. Think about going to that slot machine and how exciting it is versus going to the bank machine that pays out every single time. Even though it's nice to get the money, it's just not exciting.
No. And now I hope this helps you with some important tips for your training. And if this is your first time here on the podcast, make sure you hit that subscribe or follow button. You know, we get nearly an episode out every single week since we started season two, and we're excited about some of the upcoming articles that Shannon's written, some of the upcoming conversations that we're going to have, and I'm happy to share them with you who have been hanging out with us, listening to us natter away. Well, me natter away, and Shannon dropping absolute knowledge bombs. It's been a lot of fun. If you are on YouTube, we also have a podcast YouTube channel, so you can see us going over some of these things and check out our new hats. Yes. That Shannon has just got for us. On that note, I want to thank you guys for listening and happy training. Bye for now, guys.
Bye, everybody.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the McCann Dogs podcast. And if you'd like some more training resources, be sure to check us out on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook at McCann Dogs. And if you'd like to train with us online, be sure to check out the show notes below for our My Dog Can online training program, where we know in just a few weeks, your dog will become a well-behaved family member. Until then, happy training.